This is Master Grio Radio, Channel 13 on your NBBTA Internet Radio Dial. I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams, and I am your host for this moment in time. It's time for purpose-driven words, shaping thoughts, building minds, true wealth, communities, and legacies.
If my words had wings, they'd fly to you each day.
Welcome. This is Master Grio Radio, and this is the Digital Drummer. Jim Newsom talks urban tech talk on the radio with you every other Sunday. And we're going to welcome Jim Newsom on the line, so say a big hello for Jim Newsom. Hello, Mr. Newsom.
Good evening. Welcome. I'm so glad
How
to
are
be
you?
Here with everybody. I'm so glad to be here with everybody tonight. Jack, you've been doing such a phenomenal job, and the feedback I've been getting on the show has just been great. I will be tying in James Hines tonight from Hines Media Group to talk about the app challenges and by parents for kids and what's happening in the mobile educational market.
Okay, that's really great. And also, if you'd like to call in, we love to hear from everyone. The number is 646-716-7994. Again, that number is 646-716-7994. Or you can join us in our chat room. Just come on over to blogtalkradio.com/N as a national BBTA, and join us in the chat room. We want to hear what's going on in your community in the area of technology. You know, what good things are happening, who's doing what. Just let us know at least one thing going on in your community in technology. Again, like I said, if you'd like to call in, the number is 646-716-7994.
Hey, Jim.
So, Jim, yes.
Yes, that's James Hines tying in on the line. Welcome, James.
Hey, great to be here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, okay. How are you, James?
I am well, thank you.
That's great. So, James, here on Master Grio Radio, we really like to connect with our guests. So, you know, the question is, everybody truly is wondering, who is James Hines? And then you can share to us what's your claim to fame. But who's the person, James Hines?
Ouch. Let's try to avoid the claim to fame. But I'm a tech entrepreneur, recently just relocated to Northern California, up here in San Francisco Bay Area, Silicon Valley, after spending a number of years in Los Angeles as a new media guy, music guy. Bi-coastal, still called New Jersey home with my fiance, and right now I'm excited about the opportunities of working with startups who are leveraging technology to change the world, to make it better, and all that other cool stuff.
Okay. It's great. So, how did you get into the technology thing? You know what I mean? Has it been something you've always done since you've been young? Did you major in it in high school or college? Or did you just, how did you, you know, get this love for technology?
Okay. Kind of fell into it over time. I mean, I'm going to blame it on comic books and a lot of sci-fi growing up. But I actually, along with that, I did take one or two computer classes in high school when I was, you know, one of those Ivy Tech after school things when you were had enough credits that you to graduate, you can do other stuff. So I think I had 1 year of like basic programming, COBOL and Fortran, and that's way back in the day. But mm-hmm. over time, you know, and also my reading habits. I mean, even I grew up in Gary, Indiana, and there was a cool bookstore which I was able to go get, like, Popular Mechanics and Popular Science, which is still around today, because I was always a fan of gadgets. I remember building a go-kart like everybody else in my neighborhood, except I went to the library and figured out how to add a steering control using a wheel. I just had always had a fancier ride. So, but over time, after going to college in the early 80s and dropping out to pursue career in music and leaving Indiana and coming to Los Angeles, I was fortunate enough to have friends who were in the entertainment industry slightly, you know, dancers on Soul Train. God, you call that entertainment industry, but yes, I got me in the right doors. And I was a readaholic. Along that way, I was always reading manuals on the latest gear. I was a musician. So I expanded my skill set from not only playing an instrument, bass guitar, but also learning how to get involved in sequences and other computer-based technologies that were coming onto the scene in the early 80s, like samplers and such. And so, you know, finding out cool gear was kind of my thing, and I got a lot of early consultant gigs that lasted for me for a number of years before getting into actual software development, you know, meaning I migrated from being a guy who could help you mix and make sound samples to someone who got interested in how to make product. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, I got involved with a video game company in the UK. We were involved in pre-DVD stuff called CDI, Compact Disc Interactive, making video games. I mean, they did everything from Thumbelina to The Joy with Sex, converting the massive book libraries into interactive disc program. And shortly thereafter, I got involved in the web, where a friend of mine who was a graphic artist took me to one of his side projects. I went to this house up in Hollywood Hill, and I saw these young people. To me, you know, I'm in late 20s, they're early 30s, yeah, late 20s, I'm somewhere. And I meet these kids who are still in college, who are in a big house creating this cool animation and graphics on a screen. And what blew me away is they were the same type of animation and graphics I was working on when I was still doing this CDI stuff, except when they finished, they pushed a button and went to the web. And when we finished, we had to wait for shelf time and go to market and retail. I was like, oh, I'm in the wrong business. So I immediately jumped on into the web, you know, the early days of .com, was able to secure some nice contracts to develop web and webcast products for a lot of interesting projects. HBO, I worked on Spike Lee's Four Little Girls, did the webcast website, related events for that for the national broadcast, and probably sold the game. And along the way, developed this love for saying, as this cool technology comes to the line, I want to make sure as much black culture is covered as possible, both things that are historical stories in nature, but also icons that were still here. You know, at that time, Coach Eddie Robinson was the most winningest coach in football, college football. And I worked on the project to help acknowledge that thing. So my thing was how to leverage technology to really make sure that these cultural stories of America, black history particularly, are culture and its accomplishments, were leveraging the tool set. And let's shift to today. You know, .com one happened. I didn't become the billionaire that I wanted, because I just didn't have the right, in my retrospect, mentorship that kind of guided my skills and tool set. At the end of the day, you do need some knowledge of how to make, you know, what is the path to, you know, creative abilities. But you know, it is important to, I've discovered it, so I share this a lot, that people do need inside information, which is not secret or proprietary. It's just if nobody tells you, you don't know. And a lot of us don't know to ask. We just think that, you know, our raw ability should open up a door, and that's not a true statement at all. But to where we are today, in that after being in Los Angeles, which just has a tremendous amount of talent and organizational things going on, but the real opportunities are to be in Northern California and Silicon Valley, where deployment of capital takes place every day that's based on how to take an idea and make it and deploy capital and other resources behind it. And there's an awesome technology ecosystem here. So I had to come up here and get involved in that, because my passion for today is I'm focused on education projects, things that leverage technology that's going to change education and provide other opportunities for teaching and learning, whether it's public schools or private schools or higher learning. My thing is more, I think citizens and more Americans could do better if the education opportunities were more in line with their interests and also different ways to really measure what they are, what they need to achieve. So edtech.com is, you know, startupedtech.com is my biggest love right now. It's a way for me to work with other entrepreneurs, other startups, and to engage them in helping them find marketing and other resources so that the best ideas in education and entertainment can come to market.
Excuse me, just real quick, while you're talking, James, can you give me the website again? Is it edtech.com or startupedtech.com?
Startupedtech, and that's edtech.com. So it's startupedtech.com, and we're actually doing a big event here in San Francisco this Friday as part of Social Media Week, which is taking place tomorrow from the 13th to the 17th in about a number of cities across the globe. And Startup Ed Tech, our goal is to partner with Urban Tech Fair and other outreach programs to help bring more developers, authors, and illustrators to help them bring their ideas to market that are focused, you know, that are in the education space.
Now, James, I learned a little bit something here. I've been knowing you about 15 years, and
yes.
I knew you from the film and the movie industry. I know you've won quite a few awards and credits on that level as well.
A few awards and a few credits, but those are marketing awards, so please don't go looking for any DBIs about me winning anything that says anything with acting or writing, but more marketing awards and things that we've done or I've been a part of that leverage tech to really get our messaging across and help our products do well.
Now, you were talking about your passion with Startup Ed. I know that you've recently got involved with, is it Citizen Space and the co-working movement? Can you tell us the advantage
of
co-working?
Oh, yeah, co-working is killer. Google this term, co-working, and you'll see a lot on it. But co-working is really a movement to change the face of work. It's a collaborative thing where instead of renting your own cubicle or desk in these big office things, we run an open space. And our like other co-working facilities that provide a solo entrepreneur or small startup groups, a space to come get internet, electricity, and focus on just their core business ideas. This is for companies who don't want to work out of their house, can't work at Starbucks, and who need a professional environment that's friendly for them to, like, not only work on their idea, but hear and be close to other collaborative, talented people of same. Citizen Space is one of the oldest co-working facilities around. It's ran by a friend of mine, Toby Morning, who was also involved in, I think, this broadcast is coming on tonight. It was at CNN, Black in America. Some of that was shot at that facility. And the citizenspace.us is just one of like 600 in North America and 2,000 around the world, which are a growing trend of coming, you know, of places where technologists can come together and get their and work on their ideas in the day and network and smooth in the evening, you know.
Now, you know, we've talked about this before. You've been in the industry a long time. We've been to many events back when we, to date ourselves, back in the old Comdex events. And
Comdex, yes.
And CES and Digital Hollywood. And one thing that you're always saying to me is when you go to these different events and shows, there's so few people of color that are present there and women that are present, and you said to me once, and I'll never forget. You said, "Jim, you know why there's not that many blacks in technology?" I said, "Why?" Because they don't come to events like this. Can you expound a little bit on that philosophy about trade fairs, shows, and networking?
True. I mean, technologists have to hang out with other technologists, both buyers and programmers and artists and salesperson. I mean, the major trade shows are really, don't, you know, if you register to them early enough, they're free or near free. You know, whether you come in as a reporter or just an attendee, and they are key because they're international in nature. People, they're held all over North America, and they're held in other parts of the world, and they're important because they're where the buying, selling, and the networking of technology takes place. But my biggest concern is when I do these events, and I have other colleagues who share the same perspective. There's a friend of mine, she with her own dollars puts on an event every year in Vegas at CES, and also as she did it at NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, where she created an opportunity to bring more people of color together, and it's just a network while we're at this event. But it is, even when I spent time in Los Angeles, which I worked for a number of years, I always joined the professional mainstream association because there is nothing that prevents me from doing that, and that's where you're going to learn from those who are doing it and at the same time who are trying to evolve an industry and create protocols and standards. I mean, technology is one of those things where you need to show up. You know, it's one of those things, like a lot of said, you can't win if you don't play. And my thing is that we need to participate in the mainstream activities because our contribution to go as large as they need to be are there. I mean, while it is important to have women, Black, Latino, and other gender and ethnic organizations that have a very hands-on grassroots appeal and approach, at the end of the day, we are seeking to provide something that is very broad and very global. And we must step up to that and also encourage the young ones coming behind us to do the same. You know, you can participate in a very broad field while not losing hold to, you know, how hard it is to have gotten here. You know, To me, I find it fun. I pay attention and always search out for those who came before me. But I'm at this point where my goal is, besides continually laying down my own footprint, but it's to lay a very clear and uncluttered path for those who want to come behind and help those who are trying to define a path that maybe I'm not aware of, but, you know, my job is to help.
Now, you know, talking about a clear, defined path, and you kind of touched on it earlier when you were going over your history, is that in these different app challenges and business challenges that you're hack events, that coordinating and orchestrating, there's more than just coding or tech activities going on. I think you've told me before they kind of focus on the fundamentals of business and networking, coming to agreement, and developing a different marketing and target ideas. I know Jackie's thing is marketing.
You're so right. And here's what happens in a very short time, that you can learn the principles of success in a short time if somebody puts them in front of you. Point of, for example, what takes place in a lot of, in Northern California and in other tech-centered cities are things called hackathons and startup weekends. Hackathons are like one-day events where somebody comes up, people pitch their ideas, and they work on them. But the judging criteria is not for, can you show me just a visual or working prototype of your idea, but give me the business case for why it's going to work. Give me the marketing rationale for why where the audience is at, so that I, the person who's judging for viability and for shall I give you investment capital, will be satisfied. And the thing is, these events, those rules are laid out where you get to practice those rules, where it says it doesn't matter if it's a one-day event or a multi-day event. You come into a room and say, hey, I'm just an idea person. I just got an idea. And then you are shown very easily that here are other things that you, idea person, need to circle around you. Get yourself a developer in the room so he can ask, here she can do the programming. Get a graphic person so they can work with the user interface and the coloring because, you know, visual is very important. Bring on a biz dev person so they could work with you early on about the sustainability issue. So those things are part of the criteria. So when you say I have an idea, you can't just say, here's my idea. You have to learn early on, particularly if you want to run your own idea and be the CEO to your idea, how to bring other people around you that you may have not known were important, but you learn early on that you need to craft those relationships and how to manage those relationships, because that is part of the finished packaging that capital or money looks at when it makes an investment decision. And also, it helps you, pardon me, other people than us, it also helps you focus on the other, you know, business aspects of taking a product to market so it can be viable and life cycle. And, you know.
Now, that's what you're doing in the for-profit arena in the quote-unquote dot-com entrepreneurial world. I want to talk a little bit about something, one of my favorites that you've got me involved in, is Buy Parents for Kids, the national application challenges that you're trying to put together.
Well, our national app challenges, they really work on the same thing. They have to have the same rules. It doesn't matter if it's an app that you've been, if we put out a query and said, okay, who's got the best app for education, for teaching, the same rules still apply. We say, pitch us your idea, but you must, when you finish pitching your idea, you must give us these other bullet points that we're interested in as well. You know, who's your market? Who's your competition? What kind of features are you going to make? Why do you make these features? What problem does it solve? I mean, all ideas come back from the notion, there's a problem, here's a solution, here's our, and here's how our competitors address it, and this is how we address it, and how we address it is why we deserve the capital from you to go further down, you know, down this road.
Now, the education market, now that they're going digital, what is it? I've heard some phenomenal number, like, what is it, $3 trillion or something? What's the educational market in the U.S. worth?
The education, well, I look at it this way. I mean, the U.S. spending on education is worth, you know, it's like $500 billion, and that is K-12, and I think higher learning, and it needs to be retooled. And my thoughts are, as we put together the startup ed tech programs, which are to identify people who are trying to solve this problem, and our own proprietary publishing programs to encourage in-house development, we have two questions. How do we make teaching better, and why? I mean, at the end of the day, what we looked at is, you know, how do we overhaul the education of our children, and for what purposes? We feel those are two critical questions that open up doors for both new people and experience. I mean, come on, there are great educators who've been out there, who are still out there. They are not the issue. It is, are their processes getting in around to enough people, and how do we multiply what works? And technology is going to be a great way to do that, in that the amount of kids who need to be in the classrooms and the amount of great teachers that need to be in the room cannot physically be made overnight. We can't grow enough buildings and pour enough concrete to build enough schools, and we can't clone enough teachers. But technology will allow us to do a couple of things. Take the teachers who are excellent at what they do and multiply their efforts to be delivered on demand, be it video or animation, whatever. And working through mobile and internet devices will allow us to bring classrooms in homes, in dorms, and other places outside of the four walls that are in our neighborhoods. So that's really why I'm excited about education, because there are ways to empower the young mind and also empower the people who guide those young minds. And technology is that path.
Oh, yeah. So, I have a passion like you.
But it also opens up the door for people who are in our world. Yes.
Just before you go on, because you've given out so much information so quickly. And we want to take a moment to digest. We want to take a break. I'm just going to play one song. And when we come back, I want to go back to the Buy Parents for Kids. And if you could, like, really break that down, you know, what the site is about, you know, and how it all works. Because I know we're saying app challenges and all. but everyone listening may not really understand the jargon and actually what that means. If you can actually create a visual and break down to us by parents for kids and how, you know, how do people engage, who can become involved, and all of those details. Is that all right?
Thank you so much.
Okay. And James, what kind of music do you like? What kind of music or spoken word do you like?
I'm a Midwest, and I'm from middle school. I do funk from the Midwest and some serious jazz, so either or works for me.
Okay, so you like jazz and some funk. And I don't have too much funk uploaded here, so you like any Gil Scott?
Who doesn't love Gil Scott?
Okay, radio. Okay. Well, I'm just go there because it's easier. We're going to just do a toast by Gil Scott, and we'll be right back with James Hines, entrepreneur and technologist, and we're going to talk a little bit more about By Parents for Kids.
We would.
right, we're back. This is the Digital Drummer with James Newson talking Urban Tech Talk. And special guest today is James Hines. And he's going to share with us some more about by parents for kids. Can we visit that website while you're speaking?
No, I would prefer if you visit startupedtech.com because we're actually still under construction under the By Parents for Kids. We're actually using our Startup EdTech is our main focus because we're actually launching events in different markets with that.
Okay.
So By Parents for Kids is doing is spinning around, not doing what I needed to do. So that simple answer is no.
Okay, no problem. We posted the other site.
The show is already posting highlights from this this session on the Facebook and social networking sites as we speak, and she posted up the Startup Ed link. I'm looking at it now on the Facebook group.
Awesome. Thank you so much. But to give you the idea of By Parents for Kids is our main publishing focus, and Startup Ed Tech is just our outreach. And the reason that By Parents for Kids came about is that we wanted my partners and I, that is Terrence Coles and Brenda Wilson, both technologists and people who've been involved in business as well as community activities for years, what we wanted to do was create something that was very parent-centric. We realized that as a lot of technology comes down the road and our parent and our young kids are involved in it, we wanted to present a company that looked at it from a parent's perspective or our guardian, in that we wanted to provide a way for them to have insight as well as information and in some cases overview of the kind of technology that's coming into their homes because of internet projects that students are bringing them or into their classroom. So By Parents for Kids is involved in everything from guides to the best apps that are out there for education and education supplement to creating online and offline events that are both student-centric, educator-centric, and parent-centric, in that we believe that parents are involved in empowering the young minds in their household and that their hands need to be empowered as well. And the best way to do that is provide products and services that speak specifically to their desire for the best educational opportunities for their children. Hence why we said By Parents for Kids.
And that's a great name. You have such marketing expertise whether you're talking about mobile apps, or music, or film. In terms of relative to our listeners that are trying to get a business started, you know, we hear so often everybody hold on tight, don't say anything because, you know, somebody may steal your idea is unprotected. I know you deal with new ideas, new concepts every day in these different co-working spaces and challenges, hackathons that you participate in.
Right. I mean, reality, very, very few things are that proprietary, which they require that type of scrutiny from beginning to end. But most ideas deserve and can use outside help early on. And, you know, the old saying, do you want 100% of nothing or would you rather have 25% of something that's really awesome? Give me the 25% of something that's really awesome. I mean, if I don't have the capital and the cash up front to develop what I need in mind, partnering is a great way to get a product down the line, because at the end of the day, this is a lot of tools are maybe affordable and easy to use, but that doesn't mean you, the person, have the skill set or time to learn the skill set in the time that you want to take your product to market. So what we teach people early on, that, you know, basic things like pursuing copyrights and trademarks and registration are easy to pursue. And it's, you know, it's not a secret how to do that. You can go online and Google, you know, how to trademark, how to copyright. But the real thing is you want to pitch your idea into people that you feel or that you have an idea that their skill set is going to help you make the necessary demo or first type of project prototype that is going to be necessary to showcase to a particular to a potential customer, a potential investor market. Because if it doesn't get seen, it's not going to get made. More than likely.
Mm.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask for our listeners, some that may not know or understand, you know, what is the process? You know, somebody creates an app. You know, what is the process to going from idea to creation? You know, and getting it on the market. And then the third thing is actually getting people to, you know, drive enough traffic to the market so that people are using it. You know, how does that develop?
I think in the just the things you said, you really pointed out the steps. What I'm going to do is just add more details to each step. I mean, first one is, how do you get an idea made? Well, most ideas you really can't make. Most ideas you can just prototype, in that a lot of app ideas really require a lot of time to do a lot of heavy programming and be very robust maintenance programs. Because when you buy something, you know, it's got to work not only the day you bought it, but it's got to work ongoingly. So most ideas are realistically prototyped, meaning there's an image of how it works, or there's a barely working model that shows that the parts do work. And that's the first thing you do with an idea. You're really prototyping it. And the prototype is the proof of concept that you generally, that allow you to get more support, meaning engage marketers, other developers who can help you build a more robust model, and also financing. And let's talk about money, because money is very important in moving an idea forward. But a lot of people are under the impression that when you have an idea, all the money that you need, you should be able to ask for on day one. Well, not really, because sometimes you have an idea, you may only need the money you need to develop the prototype version of it, because you really don't know what a full functioning model needs until you do a lot of research and look and see, is there a computer, and, you know, how many features do we need and all that stuff. So most money you get is either called seed money, you know, the little money to grow it, or angel money. And then, so money comes in stages. There's seed money, angel money, VC money, venture capital money, you know, or institutional money. And all of it's not necessary. Some ideas can do well just from seed to some ideas can be made fully to go from just seed money, which is maybe anything from a few thousand dollars to a few hundred thousand dollars, to angel money, which is generally tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands, it tops off to maybe a million, to VC money. Anytime you go from a million to 2 million plus, you're basically talking venture capital money. And let me share this one really important thing about taking on money. When you take on money, trust me, there is an expectation of return based on your projections and on your projections. So there is a pressure to perform. So taking on money should always be very careful. It's not about somebody taking your idea because they gave you money, but more likely people lose their ideas because they can't meet the expectations they made. So that's why it's important to, you know, take on, realize when you create an idea, when you have an idea, your real goal is to take the idea and make a prototype and then test it with as many different situations and people as possible before you go to the next level of asking for more money and more features, because every set of money you take in puts more pressure on you to perform.
Money costs, and whether you're talking about somebody
taking
your idea or ruining your credit, it costs, and it's not something to be taken lightly. Even though, as you said, there are different stages of development that should be well thought out, and you should have a good accountant and a lawyer on your team to begin with.
Oh, Well, let's start with it. Most people don't have a great access. What is a good accountant? What is a good lawyer? So let me go backwards. I'm going to go to other competitive websites because they are important. Go to startupweekend.org. Go to startuptamper.com. And also, please go to startupedtech. I mean, the reason I give you these sites is because they put on a lot of events that people pitch ideas, and there's the rules for not only how to make an idea work, like I just talked about, where does money come in, where does legal, all of those information, that type of information is available. And people need to be going to these sites to study how these things work so that they can understand two things. What are the rules in place, but also look at example of companies who are there so they can see what is a good accountant in this market look, tech market look like. What is legal? I mean, all those rules and all those companies, what they do is out there and very transparent. And so while you may be living in another part of the country outside of New York or California or states that do this all the time, you know, you can, by learning what these companies look like and what the language and how they talk, you can apply it to the local entrepreneur resources in your market. And when you engage somebody, you can know the 5 or 10 questions that you would want to ask and that you should be asking. So that's how I look at helping anybody who's listening to really get a better grasp of things. Go to competing competition and just look at how these things are ran, because they're very, very transparent, meaning those rules are on their sites. And also go to HeinzMediaGroup.com, which is my own company site. I probably have a link to maybe at least 10 or plus competitions around the world. You know, there's Mass Challenge in Boston, there's Startup in Chicago. I mean, these things are held, and they're all similar. And that's what you're going to notice, because there is a certain common framework that's been developed that all of them we all use. You know, day one, pitch an idea. Day two, work on developing. Day three, do presentation in front of judges who are familiar with your ideas, sector of industry, be it medical, education, entertainment, media, tourism, whatever, who will ask you these very common questions. Who is your audience? Who's your competitor? How big is your market? How does your product or service or app solve a problem? And I'm going to end with this and say that we're entering something called the decade of the developers, which for the next few years, developers are going to be the hot job opportunities. And we can develop a lot of these job developers in-house, in our cities. You know, the programming languages are, a lot of them can be learned online, and a lot of it can be learned through schools and through online meetup groups. And so, you know, a lot of these internet devices are going to require people with programming skills, which I encourage as many of our men and women, as well as boys and girls, who have a passion for geeky things to get involved. I mean, there's all kind of cool organizations that I work with. There's one called Technovation, and their goal is to encourage more girls to be involved in the sciences. They just did a great thing, a national challenge. They put together a 10-week program that works with mentors and women in technology to work with school educators to help encourage and mentor girls to get involved in technology all over. And I think in our own groups, NAACP has AXO, which is a great science of Olympics of the mind association. So we have a lot of these both niche as well as mainstream programs out there. Use Google and any other search engine you want to search for them. Because now that I've said it, I'm giving you people the terms to look for. Look for co-working, look for startup events, look for hacking events, because those are the type of jobs that are going to be important right now. I mean, here's my small story, and I'll quit running so much. I'm from Kentucky originally. I was born in the South. My parents left the coal mines of Kentucky for the steel mills and automotive factories of the Midwest and Indiana. Well, we're decades later. This is Silicon Valley, and Jim said a new term yesterday, Silicon Valley is in your own backyard. Well, it is if you understand what Silicon Valley is. It's a knowledge economy that says we need more programmers, more marketers, more idea people who understand how to build products. And if they want to know, Google, use the internet for searching for how to build products, how to make apps, how to make games. And and then go follow up with those sites that seem like they have some of that information. It's research first. Reading and research is key to any development of any opportunity.
I mean, that's great advice, James. You know, you've always been like a mentor to me. I jokingly call you Sensei because you're such a teacher, and we just have our general conversation. But going back to your website, Heinz Media.
Heinz Media Group. I'm not going to Heinz Media. That is another company in Texas. I am tired of them stealing my thunder. Please, it is Heinz Media Group.
Okay. Jackie, if you can put that link up on the site so we can make sure everybody knows it correctly. But on that page, you had a wonderful video of a reality show challenge of tech companies. And one of the things that you was pointing out was not so much, quote-unquote, putting together the ABCs of a business, but having the flexibility and the advantages of a small company to be able to change or improvise as the situation develops. Maybe I'm over-talking it. You know which one I'm talking about, huh?
Yeah, it's called TechCrunch. TechCrunch is a great organization up here in Northern California that has arms all over. They're investors who not only put their capital in small companies, but also they put their expertise. And let me share that with you. Most investors not only want to put their cash, but they want to put their Rolodex in expertise to help companies win, because that's what they want. That's their passion with their money. But TechCrunch puts on these challenges and events, and they just decided to televise it and put it on television. It's this multi-week thing. So they've taken a weekend worth of work and they made it into multiple months worth of events now. But if you would, so if you Google TechCrunch and go watch TechCrunch TV, you'll see just what I'm talking about. You'll see multiple videos that show this process over, that generally takes place over a three-day weekend. It takes place now over several weeks or months. And you'll get a real understanding of what's on the inside mind of investors and hands-on money operators, but also how an initial idea may do something, which the word is pivot. It's, you know, the initial idea may say do this, but what you learn is after looking at the competitors or after looking at what the product does, you may say, well, maybe we need to change our focus and do this with the product versus that. And that's key, because a lot of people are afraid to change or enhance their ideas. And in this fast-moving economy, it is okay to change or as the word, pivot on that idea and go in another direction, because it's the best thing to do with your time and your talent.
I mean, that's good advice, because it's stuck on something and we fall in love with it and we hold on to it and we pamper it and we wait for the perfect storm before we try to develop it, and the perfect storm never comes.
Right. I mean, and it doesn't need to be that way. I mean, here's the beautiful thing. There are a lot of challenges out there that a lot of smart people, particularly your listeners, have probably an idea of that they'd like to, you know, to try, and they should. And software or tech-based solutions are going to be a big part of our big connected economy. I mean, apps, be it from a tablet or mobile phones, are just changing the way things are done. They're changing, you know, textbooks are becoming e-textbooks, whether it's in the classroom, the dorms, the colleges, or in the halls walking down the hospitals where nurses have and doctors are walking away from paper-driven applications to tablet-driven. So every part of our economy is being touched by technology. I mean, game units, most of our households have Xboxes or Sony PlayStations or all kind of connected things. And we need to be figuring out how do we get our kids and our young people to make and market these things, not just make. Everybody doesn't have to make them. There's still great opportunities to market and sell. And how to digitally market and sell.
Excuse me, James, before you go there, because that's an important point. And I have some questions too. I've been reading up on some things about use of game and gaming technology in the workplace, as far in training and different things. So I like to talk a little bit about that, but we just want to take one more break. We're gonna do a little commercial break, and then we'll come right back. And this is one of our other members of the Urban Tech Fair, Ted Harge. Is that, am I correct, Ted Harge, guys?
I think so.
Okay. But we're just going to play a commercial, and then we're going to come right back. And if you, you know, just let us know the importance of gaming, because I think sometimes, especially for parents, they just think a game is a game, something you play. But if you could really, you know, expound for us the importance of gaming technology, you know, now and in the future, and how young people can engage it, you know, not just for idle time, but actually as a career.
Yes, gamification is everything.
We can't change that. Everyone looks out for their own first. It's a natural fact. It's about time we learn. We must come together also before we can compete. Are you feeling me? Before we could earn true equality on equal footing. Then we could intermingle on a single world stage, putting everyone on the same page. If you could, wouldn't you want it? Would you? If you had it, shouldn't you flaunt it? I don't know, but I do know this. Some people think we're on a level playing field. I say, open your eyes, look around. We're not even in the same stadium. What do you say to them? We need black leaders like from the old school. Yes, leaders of the new school. Where the young ones come from, stand up from among the dumb ones. Don't you know? We've come a long way, baby, but so much further to go. Please join the World Black Networkers Association on the Mighty People Online Social Network at mightypeople.info, where our mission is to bring the world black community together in effective networking for successful living.
And we're back with James Hines on the Digital Drummer Show with Jim Newson. And James,
I got to call him back on the radio. Call you back. Bye.
Let me say this, Jackson, because I told James I was only going to hold him for an hour. And I know
we can
pick his brain all day long, but do we have any listeners that are any questions out there in the audience?
We do have Calvin Thomas is out, but he doesn't have a direct question at this time, but he is spreading the information and he's checking out the websites. but we don't have any other posted questions at this moment.
Well,
then James can talk about gamification.
I can't say enough of it. I think that was an awesome question, Jackie, that you posed in that gamification, and please Google that, let me have your listeners Google it. It's becoming the new trend of not only for education but also for the corporate environment as well as for advertisement, in that gamification really speaks to having game-like features, meaning rewards for activities, keeping score with myself or against others. That's really what gamification kind of means in a very general sense, and it's being used as a way, there are a lot of dollars that are being earmarked toward that, and it's not a trend. It's not going to disappear, because we've had a generation who's played games that has never existed before, and it's just used to them. I mean, young people who are now the young adults have grown up with it, and it is a way that they understand and they respond to the reward mechanism. They respond to the hyper-competitive challenges, both at a local and global level. So gamification is becoming – it's part of what I was saying, that thing about the decade of the developers. And so when you talk about gamification, hence you need game ideas or game challenges to make something – you know, you need ideas for that, but then it brings you back to you need writers to write stories, both short stories and long-form stories. You need programmers to create the actual programming aspect. You need – so all there's a list of skills that that a lot of our parents who didn't grow up with these things are not aware of. It's like watching a movie and you're enjoying the movie and you love the story and the actors, but you have no idea – about the 200 to 300 persons who work behind the movie. Therefore, we never encourage our kids to go look for jobs, anything from cooks on the cooks who service the film to drivers, to lighting people, to sound people, to special effects. So let me, if I may, just for literally 30 seconds, read off about maybe 10 jobs that our kids could be learning at any level from 13 on and get involved in it. And they would be an executive producer, an art director, a lead game designer, a cinematic director, a technical art director, a rigger, a lead animator, a game designer, a lead character artist, a concept artist, a story artist, a developer concept artist, a world artist, a user interface artist, a storyboard artist, a text boards artist, a 3D modeler, a props modeler, an animator, a character animator. And most of those things, except for the executive producer, you can literally learn in the comfort of your home, because any one of those things, you can go online and find a little information about it, probably find some free or near free software and start practicing before you started doing this in the schools, whether it's a high school or college, or you are a working professional who are trying to enhance your skill set. But these are things that any one of those jobs are in the traditional gaming industry, and they will involve in advertising and in the gamification of other industries. So, while a lot of your listeners buy these games for themselves, or as parents buy them for the people in their home, they may have not been aware of all these job skills that are behind making a game. And that they should be, if someone in our household has a desire, be now, you know, could be aware of, wow, you know, can you do this, that, or whatever? How do we take the gift of gab, the gift of art, storytelling, the ability to draw beautiful pictures and realistic things, and turn it into a skill set that probably won't go out of demand once you add digital to it?
Yeah, I know I was reading up, I just ran up on it. It's a group I'm on LinkedIn for your innovation site, and it was this whole thread on gamification, and I'm thinking just about games, but this whole discussion board was all about gamification in the workplace with HR. And they were telling people how, you know, it's going to become a major part of, you know, training and teaching and not playing games, but, you know, using it as a training tool and a teaching tool. And I guess what you said, incentives and competitiveness, probably with sales challenges and things as well.
I agree. I mean, let me be questioned. How many black, I would think in HR and in a lot of industries, there's probably a lot of blacks or African-Americans who work in those industries, in some industries, who have stepped back and said, you know what, I know a better way of getting some information across, or I know a better way of testing potential applicants. And I think gamification could be a great way of taking someone who's stepped back and said, you know what, I pushed a lot of paper and pencil, and here's a new way. Here's a great way of testing a new applicant or a new skill, and I think gamification could be a part of it. I mean, what I'm seeking to say is, we take traditional jobs that are held currently by your listeners in our communities and add digital to that, the equation, because everything is not youth-driven. I'm a big fan of what our youth opportunities are, but I'm also a fan of what our adults and what our experienced people can do in digital as well, without having to go back to a four-year school or what.
There's a question for you, James. Kelvin Thomas, Tom, wanted to know, he's developed an automated performance analysis reporting tool in Excel, and he wanted to know, does startup EdTech only look at educational applications, or would you look at his application as well?
I have two answers to that. One, does his application have a education opportunity? Meaning, is this something that schools or is this something that schools or school districts can utilize? And the second answer is, why on the Buy Parents for Kids side I don't, but on the Heinz Media Group entrepreneur side, yes, I do. I do look at any idea that could be cutting edge or game changing.
Okay. So you hear that, Calvin? And, you know, go to the Hines Media Group, and they definitely will support it. And then you do have the opportunity to expand its usefulness if you can, you know, add a component or structure it, and that it can also be used as a learning tool in the schools. As far as analysis.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be a learning tool. It could be an assessment tool. I mean, it could assess teachers. It could assess expenditures within in industry. I mean, without knowing specifically how his assessment tool works and how does it work better than a competitor, I mean, at the end of the day, did he create this tool to compete or to solve a problem? Does it mean he doesn't compete against another company who's doing something which he feels his is a better hammer, or does it solve a problem that, in a way that people hadn't looked at yet?
Okay. He said, great, thanks, and he will take a look at it.
Okay. Awesome.
All right. You've been a wealth of information, a wealth of knowledge, you know. I have to let you know, I love the way you break things down and make us think and break things down, because it can be a lot of information, but you're good at getting, let's get to the common denominator.
I appreciate it. My biggest thing is thought capital. That's what I profess as my biggest skill set, is using thought. My skill set is thinking things through. So thought capital is what I really work hard on providing.
Okay. Calvin did state that the problem that it solves, it solves the time that it takes to create daily, weekly, and monthly reports. So that can be used by the school system for those who have to, you know, do reports, and we're so overwhelmed with administrative and paperwork these days, and having a report, and that's even in the medical field, everyone has to do so much reporting. If you can decrease the time it takes to create these required reports, I'm pretty sure.
Tell Calvin to call, email me, whatever is necessary. Every industry has reports. If this man really has something that can solve the reporting issue, who wouldn't want to own that particular app? I mean, I hate reports. I hate reading them. I hate creating them, but they are necessary. And please, show me that one so I can help show you the money. So, yeah, prove me wrong.
Now, that brings up another question, James, something that we've discussed privately before, relative to standardization and industry protocols. I know that there are a lot of people that have a better hammer, so to speak, or a more efficient hammer, but yet the gorillas in the jungle, be they Google or iTunes or whatever, control the game. Why don't you touch on that? Because I know you have an opinion on that.
Well, let's just keep it on track. I'm going to use the guy in Calvin's project right now. What a lot of people don't realize, a lot of these big companies, the Microsofts, the Googles, even the Apples of the world, they buy other companies and services and put their name on it, because there's no need to start from scratch. I mean, Google right now is a company that's sitting on so much money, they have a multiple venture fund set up to acquire new companies and new processes that will help, that they can slap their logo on so they can go to market. So I don't look at them as being a big gorilla in the room. What I look at them as an opportunity to engage, because they're constantly looking for new ideas that will service the market that they can put that Google banner around. So with that said, here's my added value. Maybe for where I'm sitting, I can provide an introduction or understand the language skill set that Google, or maybe know the right Google funds that are would be geared towards an idea like this. But before I would show that idea or anybody's idea, I have my own vetting process. So I'd love to understand what problem is he solving, how does this problem solving different from others, and then if it's really, you know, and then work, and if those things work out, then work with him going further down the line to finding the both financial and technical resources to go test it and then go make it something, then go help it find customers.
Well, platform is sort of like the whole issue that's been going on, the changing formats and policies and everything in technology. I mean, whether you're talking about Yahoo revamping their site, or Netflix, or Facebook changing their whole policy. There's a lot of hubbub going around. I'll talk about new timeline. So I guess my point being is that once there's a learning curve that the consumer is comfortable with, do you go for ease to the consumer, or do you target a structured plan for a specific a target market or industry?
It could be any of them. I mean, at the end of the day, if I was to stick on Calvin's thing for a moment, I mean, I'm sure he thought a solution for a particular industry because there's a problem that he has run across or heard of. I mean, so at the end of the day, you're trying to make it easier for or more efficient for your customer. Either your customer likes because it's easier and it saves money and they can't do it in-house themselves, meaning so that's the reason that change all the time. I mean, nothing stays the same. I mean, the beautiful thing about technology, it's fluid and it's ongoing. The bad thing about technology, it's fluid and it's ongoing.
Well, you know, James, you've been a wonderful guest and you provided us with an excellent show. I know we have there are a lot of times there are live streams. We have a few. This is embedded in various different places, you know, the code for the player. So there are people that are listening in that we just don't see. So sometimes just because you don't hear or necessarily people aren't calling in, sometimes a show like this, people just like to listen to it, absorb it, because there's so much information, and they take notes, and they can come back and actually research. And that's the type of audience I think that this Digital Drummer Show has. A lot of people that do a lot of research, they break it all down. But as long as we provide the information and they can follow up. But there are people that listen to it, you know, stream live in various places. And you've just given us a wealth of knowledge. So, James, I'd like to ask you because, you know, my belief is always a two-way street. You know, a lot of I work with artists a lot. And like I say, with the artists, it's necessary that the community support its artists, that we really shouldn't have the concept of a starving artist, because the artists are the storytellers and keepers of our culture. And we should own our own art so we can control the stories being told. And not just the story that's being told right now, but when we leave, it's the art that lives on. Not we don't live on our physical selves. So we need to invest in that. But at the same time, the artist holds a responsibility back to the community. Now, you have given to us, so now as community members, as you're a member of our community, and you've given us knowledge and tools and all, what is your expectation of us, the community? You know, give us a next step, what we should be doing or how we should, you know, let us know our responsibility in this tech walk.
Well, my desire is to really engage all our communities through the programs we're creating, because my partners and I, we are creating these programs because we want to empower ourselves and we want to empower our next generation. I mean, Startup Ed Tech and My Parents for Kids are just two brands that I'm 1,000% behind, because they meet needs, not wants. And needs are important. We, you know, a lot of us have got caught up on our wants and we do things on our wants, but needs, our children need to be educated. Our professionals need ongoing information and education. So we want to, as publishers and producers and educators, create things that, you know, enhance, excite, and illuminate, you know, being, you know, our being here on this planet. So what I love to do is get as much, you know, people to go to our sites and let us know what cities we should be visiting, what products we should make that are both are a great teaching tool or a learning tool, and share with us, you know, how we could, like Calvin said, how can we help engage ideas that are not educational based, because entrepreneurship is the new is self-employment thing in the economy, the global economy. But entrepreneurs are made, not born. And how do you make one is you go out for as much information as you can. I mean, I love the tagline on the Master Grail, which says, education is our passport to the future, for tomorrow belongs to people who are prepared for today. And I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, and what and prepared means you go look for the information, then you interact on it, and you can't be stopped that friends and family around you are not on the same page with you. You love them, but that ain't got nothing to do with your passion and your desire to solve a problem. We are all problem solvers. We wake up in the morning solving problems, and it's a cool thing to do. So I'm looking for to know where we should be. And the best way is please contact, us or myself through either Heinz Media Group or startupedtech.com and eventually byparentsforkids.org because what we want to do is come with what we think is the most important thing, and that is how to empower our young minds to change the world for the better for themselves.
Okay.
Well, it's truly been great having you on the show, James. I knew that you would be a fantastic guest. I know that you have a passion for what you do. It's not just a job. I know you interact with all different cultures and all different groups and people in technology across the country, and you have a lot of information to share. I'm honored that you've agreed to be part of the Urban Tech Fair, that you're working with us on that level. I got some good news about Atlanta today.
Awesome.
And the BDPA president from Atlanta, Felicia Jones, we spoke. And Atlanta is excited about moving forward. Philadelphia, Jacqueline's been doing some fantastic work in Philly. And, you know, they're ready to go. In fact, I think they've already got a tentative date that they've been playing with in their mind. I'm trying to catch up with everybody else here in Compton, down in the hood to get us ready. In the LA on the West Coast, we can't let the East Coast outdo us.
Well, I love it. I mean, all of our historical organizations and agencies are, I mean, I think they're coming on board and they're really aggressive about how to, you know, leave a legacy that's relevant in today's market. And, you know, it's an honor to be able to partner with individuals and individual chapters as well as national organizations to bring things to market that takes the best of, you know, no matter what coast it is, because we're global citizens and we should look at each other that way. And we should, you know, we're strong, you know, Americans who are working with, you know, this president and his commitment to education and innovation so that, you know, we can go forward and just have a great, you know, a great country and lead a great life.
Amen to that.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you've been a great guest providing valuable information and, you know, one thing we all want to do is strive to be the best we can be. You know, one of our slogans here is mouth to mind resuscitation. You know, this is food for the mind, and from the mind it feeds the spirit. And you know, we always want to be our best individual so we can be our best family, and then if we can be the best family, we can be our best community, and then from our best community we move out from our communities to our cities, to our states, to our country. So we, and then each group has its own, you know, working will. So we want to be beneficial to the will. We don't always, you know, we don't want to be known as not being beneficial. And it's not always true story. So that's the one thing I would really love, Jim, about the Urban Tech Fair, is that you're dispelling a lot of myths. There are a lot going on, and I just know, and I'm glad you mentioned Axel, James, because there was so much negative grumbling about the NAACP being outdated. Young people today think the NAACP is so outdated. They even do poems about it. It's like so bad.
Well,
and they feel they're
I'm
so not in touch.
I'm glad you told me then, because I would be cussing some young people out.
No, they have poems about it. They feel they're so outdated and out of touch, but then people don't know about the AXO program and how forward that is. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, that's what really has got me involved. This is what's given my marketing a purpose. I mean, I love the arts, but I choose to do the marketing because I know so much here, but people over here don't know what's going on over here, and people over here don't know what's going on over here, and people over there don't realize that this is going on over here. And we live off of, you know, misinformation, rumors, and false perceptions. And then mm-hmm. I've seen it work. I actually worked with Philadelphia Mental Health Care Corporation for a few years, which was a private nonprofit that came together and brought together the city of Philadelphia and southeastern Pennsylvania mental health systems, because, you know, all of these different groups existed, but there were groups that didn't know other groups even existed. And by them pulling them together with a central hub, and again, here's where technology took a big thing. That is one of the biggest things we produced. You think mental health, one of the biggest things that PMHCC produced was software. They developed new software, ways to interact and report so the different arms could understand and know what was going on. Those that were servicing clients, those were servicing family, those were servicing children, all the different entities, they would know and understand, and they would have a better wealth of information in order to service their population and really understand what their true needs were so that they could get the resources that they actually needed. And this just shows you the many ways that technology, you know, comes into play and the problems that it can solve. But, you know, I'm just glad, like I said, Jim, that you're showcasing the great things that are going on in communities that people don't know. And, James, you know, you're a wealth of information. So this is just great and enlightening, and just, you know, continuous stories to prove just, you know, how great we are as a people and how powerful, so they don't have to keep saying that America's behind and all, you know. And let's hope in 20 years that'll be a whole new miss again.
Well, it's truly been an honor and a lot of fun to be communicating and speaking back and forth with everybody. I mean, let's just keep doing what we're doing, which is our passion to do great things and inspire young people to work with them, because, it takes a village and all that other good stuff.
All right, then, my brother. Thanks again. Okay. And we want to thank all those that are listening or are listening to the archive. Let them know to go like our Facebook pages or join our LinkedIn groups or retweet us on Twitter. We're moving forward. This is a national movement about showcasing what's going on in your neighborhood, in your backyard, demonstrating that Silicon Valley exists in your neighborhood. You don't have to go across the country. We have the resources, the money, and the knowledge in our own neighborhoods to be secure.
Oh, that's another story. I'm going to leave you alone with that one, but let me share this with you real funny. Sutton, who's tonight on CNN, they're being showcased, called, what's that thing, The New Promised Land with... Okay, Wayne showed up at my office in San Francisco about 3 days ago, talking about I'm moving to Silicon Valley. Okay, so that's another conversation.
Did you read his post he put out today on Google Plus?
I was just about to call him. I ain't read anything.
But that's a story. That's a good post there. We're going to get Wayne involved in the urban tech.
Wayne is a great guy. Wayne is awesome. And also, you are right, Jim. I found the post. I just sent it to you. Education is a $7 trillion industry. I was only focused on public spending. Public education in North America is $500 billion, but overall, across the board, digital education is considered a $7 trillion industry. So I sent you the link so you can expound on that and share with everybody else that you want to as well.
I knew I read that.
Yeah. You made me look.
You want to close us out, Jackie?
I think we're already closed out, Jim.
Oh, okay.
Awesome.
Thanks, my brother.
No problem. Chat with you soon.
All
peace.
Right.
No, I'm here. I'm here, gentlemen. I'm sorry. I mute myself out to make sure there's no background noise. I'm sorry. Wanted to let you know, Kelvin, right. In the chat room, Kelvin said, great show. He said, thanks for a great show. And James, he wanted to let you know the download link is in your email. He says, thank you, and he's looking forward to working on the Urban Tech Fair. And
awesome.
We want to give another shout-out. We got another guest up in the chat room. So a shout-out to guest number 12821. Shout-out to you. And any parting words?
It's all about the connected home, connected classroom, and connected dorm, places that we all are present. So we need to be there and staking our position, whether it's creators, publishers, or producers. You know, let's empower our young minds and let's empower ourselves.
Right.
Be an entrepreneur.
Okay. And anything,
okay.
Jim?
Thanks.
All righty. Well, have a,
you know, I always like to close with the idea of access, education, and commerce. Get the word out. Tell your friends about us. Let's go viral with this. It's about the community. It's about your neighborhood. It's about your city.
All right. Well, we're going to roll out on, since I have some a little old school guys on here, and we're talking about now and forever, you know, going on in the future, we're going to roll out on peace and love and some Natalie Cole. This will be. Have a great
awesome.
Day. Peace and love.
Peace and love.